Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 5:23 p.m. That is British summer time, and a beautiful sunny day it is here in London. And today is June 27th. Well, I'm recording a little early because I want to ensure that I am in the vicinity of somebody who knows how to handle a computer, just in case anything goes wrong with it. But when we look at what exam for example, what's going on with Natexus, it's pulled back rather sharply over the last few months. Well, part of the reason for that is because a lot of the funds in H2O, which is the fund management company it sponsors, have been had to unload really large quantities of hard to value assets. And that's never a good situation because you're never going to get what you think they're worth when you have to go off to somebody and say, "Well, can you please make a market for me in this thing?" They're going to give you the worst possible price. You're going to get a significant markdown. That is just simply how markets work. There is a predatory factor to everything that goes on, and that's, I think, a very significant factor here. But when we think about what's going on, for example, with Neil Woodford and then also with H2O, what it's telling us is that, and then I think we also need to draw the line through those two fund managers to the Vision Fund, which was set up by SoftBank and Saudi Arabia, a $100 billion fund designed to take long-term positions in these large privately held companies that represent the future of technology investment. And they're now considering an IPO after just about 12 months. Well, that tells us that companies are finally starting, or I guess investors are beginning to realize that the kinds of prices that they're paying for these privately held companies are extravagant, and that the only way that you could perhaps really justify paying them is if you thought you might be able to sell them to somebody else in the not so distant future. Well, this is also representative of where we are in the cycle. The fact that you have $13 trillion of debt that is currently in a negative yielding environment, well, that is something that is very similar, where the Bund yield today is at minus 32 basis points. Well, this is not a completely different asset class. It's in fact, it's just a simply a different way of viewing the misallocation of capital that has been a primary result of the period of quantitative easing that we've had over the course of the last decade. Well, rather than highlight what the problem is, we know what the problem is. It's been the same problem for at least the last 3 or 4 years, where we've seen that valuations have been increasing. The much more pressing question is it over? And the answer to that is probably not. We are at a position now where the ECB is on the cusp of moving into negative interest rates, and that may happen as early as September. Well, the euro is rallying. It has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. It has a higher reaction low, and it is trading right about the region of the trend mean. If it can sustain a move above it, well, then we are back in a new demand-dominated environment. The Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates in July. In other words, the USA is going to beat Europe to the punch. And that is part of the reason why the dollar is easing at the moment. But the much bigger picture is that two of the world's largest economies are on the cusp of new easing cycles. That Mario Draghi's last gift to the market before he moves on to fresh pastures will be an interest rate cut from the ECB. And then the big question will be who's going to take over and what will happen next. Well, the It looks at least like the investors in the euro are willing to bet that it's going to be more difficult for the next head of the ECB to cut interest rates or engage in quantitative easing, and that is helping to support the euro. Well, I think it is rather interesting, therefore, that gold, having been really quite strong over the course of the last week or two, was down yesterday. But it's just a consolidation. It looks like just a consolidation. the most important level now is $1,350. If we look at the history over the course of the last decade, it has failed to sustain moves above $1,350 since at least 2014. Now it is above $1,400, and there is, I think, some consolidation going on. Then I think there is another point that Bitcoin had been surging higher and tacking on over $1,000 a day over the course of the last while. Now, I think it is important to look at Bitcoin on a logarithmic scale chart. And when we do that, then the size of the pullback today, despite the fact that it is in the order of $1,750, which is a substantial pullback already, it is on a percentage basis rather similar to what we saw in May. Therefore, if Bitcoin steadies tomorrow and moves into another range, potentially lasting upwards of 3 or 4 weeks, well, there is the scope then that this is still a consistent trend. Of course, there is the risk that we are due a mean reversion. And the trend mean right now is at 6,215. So if Bitcoin fails to find support tomorrow, then that will raise the potential that we're going to see a much more volatile period unfolding. One thing that I think is also worth considering is that when we look at the speed with which things happen today, then I think that there are some important conclusions to be drawn. Last year we saw, for example, the first company that got to $1 trillion market cap, and since then four have. There's only one, I think, at the moment, Microsoft, which is still above $1 trillion. The speed or the time with which it's taking new companies to reach a valuation of $1 billion is something that is happening at an increasingly quick rate. Well, obviously, that is being driven both by the fact that you have this massive quantity of liquidity that's chasing returns, but it's also about the network effect. It's about the fact that when you move online and you are delivering a service on a software basis rather than having to go out and build physical infrastructure, then there is the potential that you are going to be able to grow faster. So we're seeing growth occurring much quicker than would normally have been the case. Then, when we then think about Bitcoin, the speed with which things are happening in the cryptocurrency markets is mind-boggling. And we had a speculative mania back in 2017. We had a depression-type decline in 2018. And there has certainly been at least some mania to the pace with which the advance has occurred over the course of just the last 2 months. Again, this is also representative of the network effect, and also that this is software dependent, and that there is a very significant transition going on right now with the introduction of the broad, the institutional sector into the Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency markets, with the introduction of Facebook as a potential deal broker. And then yesterday we had the announcement, when I became aware of it, that crypto is a fast-moving market, but that even that is dwarfed by the pace of innovation that is occurring at present in the quantum computing realm. And when we start to think about exponential growth, when we start thinking more in terms of raising growth projections to the power rather than to doubling, then that is a very profound change. Well, when we think about Google, they make most of their money from advertising, and the trend has been losing consistency. One of the things that I think is most profoundly an issue now that was not before is antitrust. But one of the things to bear in mind about antitrust is that when a company gets broken up, the existing shareholders get pieces of each one of the constituent parts. And therefore, from an investor's perspective, antitrust is perhaps not as great a challenge in the medium term as one might think it is in the short term. I think that's a rather important differentiator. That's equally true of the kinds of demands that are potentially being put onto Amazon. One thing that we definitely have is that despite the fact that the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones are right in the region of their respective trend of the upper sides of their ranges, we have seen a loss of consistency for some of these very large companies. Amazon, for example, has bounced very impressively from the region of the trend mean. And it is also right in the region of the upper side of its range, and it is firming, and that is a positive development. So these are, I think, rather noteworthy developments. Now, when we do look at what's going on in terms of the stock market, well, everyone is assuming that we can expect a rate cut in July, and I do think that that is quite likely. The fact that James Bullard described it as an insurance cut, I think, is very instructive. What it also suggests now, rather than the haggling over whether they should cut by 50 basis points or 25 right off the bat, is rather beside the point when they think of it as an insurance cut. What that really confirms is that we have an environment where the Federal Reserve is reacting in anticipation of a deteriorating policy or economic environment rather than responding to it. And that, I think, does raise the potential that we're going to see an upward break, that there is the scope here that markets are going to rally. And it will probably be driven by a weaker currency. Then the question is, what's going to happen in terms of the bond market? We've seen a meaningful compression in yields over the course of the last while. And now the big question is, aren't we due some consolidation? Particularly in view of the fact that there is a very profound short-term oversold condition. I think we are due at least some pause here. But nonetheless, the sequence of lower rally highs remains intact. And from a medium-term perspective, I think it is reasonable that if we've had a failed upside break above 3%, it's quite likely that we're going to go back down and test the lower side of the range. Well, the other big point, of course, is that we are looking into the weekend with the G20 meeting. And it does look like the A-share market is beginning to price in that there will be a reasonably benign outcome to that to that meeting between Xi and Trump. The Hang Seng index was up 400 points in here today, up an additional 1%, and it is bouncing pretty impressively now back above the trend mean. And the Nikkei, it still has some work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but at least it is steadying. I would be a lot happier if the second section index was back above the 7,000 level, and also that the dollar could break its progression of lower rally highs against the yen. I think the Japanese market probably has more challenges ahead of it than most other developed markets in this environment, not least because the yen has been that bit much more strong. I've written a bit today about the Baltic Dry Index. I had anticipated being able to make a composite chart of the demolition of ships, and despite the fact that Bloomberg has the indices. It doesn't have any data in them, so that hope was rather dashed in here today. We are definitely seeing a pop up in demand for shipping here, or at least that shipping prices are advancing, potentially because of an uptick in demolitions ahead of the IMO 2020. But one thing is certain, this index does look like it is going higher from here, and there is potential for it to move in a more dynamic manner still. Oil prices were also in positive territory in here today, and they're now back to the region of the trend mean. So this is a potential area of support, or excuse me, of resistance. And but we would need a downward dynamic in order to confirm resistance. I do think that we're in a more volatile environment. We're going to have bigger swings, both up and down. The key level is going to be about $80, and it would really require a geopolitical incident. And of course, there is the potential that we could have a geopolitical incident with Iran, but perhaps not right away. So I think that's one of the more important points to bear in mind. Then, when we think about what's going on in India, there have been a number of concerns raised about parts of the banking sector, but perhaps more. Urgent is the water situation in India. The monsoon has not been particularly strong. Chennai is running out of water, and water scarcity is going to become a geopolitical issue in the region. I think that is something that is a long-term consideration. It is something that needs to be addressed. It's something that we need to monitor. But in the meantime, the Nifty index does look like it is still in a bull market environment. I also think that if we're going to get a weaker currency, that is going to be beneficial for the majority of the emerging markets. The Brazilian market is benefiting perhaps more than any other from commodity imports from to China or exports to China, and that may also be part of the reason why the Baltic Dry Index is doing better at the moment. So I think that's one of the conditions that needs to perhaps be taken into account when looking at that uptrend we're seeing in the Baltic Dry Index. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.